An attorney-client relationship between Moss and Barnett, a professional association, or any attorney appearing on this program and any caller or listener. Please remember that we can only give general information, and every case is unique. Always check with your individual attorney for any specific legal concerns. If you are in need of specific legal advice or are looking for an attorney, please do not hesitate to give Moss and Barnett a call at 612-877-5000.
This is WCCO's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
Thanks so much for joining us. Steve Thompson, Tom Schroyer, our host in studio each and every week. Dennis Matuzak is our studio coordinator. And Tom, welcome to the studio. Good to see you. It's hard to believe the week goes so quickly and boom, we're back with Minnesota Law every Saturday at noon.
You know, it's
goes
just
quick.
It is so great to be here, Steve, working with you. It's so much fun. And Dennis as well here in the studio. And we just really look forward to these events so much and really to getting into interesting, helpful topics with our listening audience, as Moss and Barnett is a business law firm, and we really do think it's important for folks to have some better sense and understanding about what these kinds of legal issues are that that a firm like ours deals with, because they really touch on the lives of people in such profound ways. And we're going to talk about one today in a minute with Dave Jendrzejek, one of our partners. And Dave is a graduate of the University of Wisconsin University and Law School. He was Phi Beta Kappa. He is certified as a civil trial specialist by the Minnesota State Bar Association, and Dave focuses on non-compete lawsuits involving employees and employers. And he's also quite an accomplished marathoner, Steve. Dave has run in 12 marathons, including Twin Cities and Grandma's, Chicago, New York. He's qualified for Boston, and he holds a personal best time of an incredible 3 hours flat. Dave, welcome to our show.
Well, thank you so much, Tom, for that very nice introduction. And, you know, I have to say, running may be an individual sport, but success doesn't come without help from a lot of others. I belong to a local running group called the Jack Turtles, and the support and encouragement I get from the great people in that group does a lot to help me through those long 22-mile training runs.
I'll bet that running a marathon is helpful for your law practice.
You know, interestingly enough, I found there are a lot of things in common between running marathons and practicing law, particularly litigating employment law cases. To be successful in either, Tom, requires a good plan, disciplined and thorough preparation, careful execution, and when a rough patch hits, as they do from time to time, a relentless focus on reaching your goal or your client's goal.
We're going to talk today about non-compete agreements, and of course, these receive a fair amount of publicity from time to time when highly paid radio stars are subject to having them enforced if they ever want to change from one station to the next. That never happens, though, does it, Steve?
Well, there is occasion. I don't think I have a non-compete here. I'm pretty sure I didn't sign anything.
All right.
I'm pretty positive about that. But it is true in radio and television. We hear about that all the time. But I know a lot of people in the sales area that have signed non-competes as well. So I've heard of those, not only in this business, but the other business I'm in during the week.
Well, and I wanted to make a comment, Dave, interested in your opinion too, but it seems to me that as industry gets more competitive and as more and more businesses are consolidated, that employers are looking increasingly to including non-compete agreements in written employment agreements with their employees.
I think that's so true, Tom. As businesses, especially in harder times, find that it's more difficult to generate business and keep customers, they want to do everything they possibly can to protect those interests in those ongoing customer relationships. And a non-compete, as we're speaking of, is one good way to do that.
Now let's back up a minute, though, and make sure that we're all on the same page here. What exactly is a non-compete clause or feature in an employment contract?
Well, a non-compete agreement, and by the way, these goes by different names. Sometimes they're referred to as covenants not to compete or restrictive employment covenants, but they are all the same thing. They're essentially a contract between an employer and an employee that restricts the employee's right to compete in some way against the employer for a period of time after leaving employment. They can take many forms. We often see these, and we're talking about these in the context of an employment relationship, but we also see them in the context of sales of businesses, where the seller of a business wanting to protect that ongoing stream of business going forward requires the seller of the business to go ahead and require that there be no interference with the business going forward for some set period of time. And sometimes, Tom, in the context of a sale of a business, that may be for a number of years.
Well, and I know we're going to focus here on these agreements in the employment context and not in the sale of a business context, because there are different rules that apply between the two situations.
There are indeed.
Now, one of the things that I wanted to ask you about is, it seems to me that these agreements really are, in a way, a form of servitude, that they tie people's hands after they leave from one employer to try to go to another employer. What is the rationale for allowing a business to prevent someone from leaving, terminating their employment, and going to a competitor?
Well, there are competing rationales, and public policy plays a very big part in the enforcement of these types of contracts. On the one hand, you've got the employer's bona fide interest in protecting its business, in protecting its ongoing stream of business, and the very valuable relationships that it has developed with its customer base. On the flip side, you have the employee's right to be employed by whom he or she wishes, and the right to move from one job to another. And in our free marketplace here in the United States, we value the ability to go from one position to another. So there's a balance that has to be taken into account and served to recognize the interests of both parties here.
Now, I know some states, I think North Dakota, for example, maybe Wisconsin, we'll talk about that in a minute, have state law statutes that really either prohibit or severely restrict these agreements.
They do. Non-competes are not treated equally throughout the country. Some states, such as California, are very anti-non-compete agreements. They are very pro-employee. Another state like that, not quite to the same effect, is Wisconsin, right across the river. Wisconsin has rules that make it more difficult for an employer to enforce non-competes.
To what extent, Dave, do you think that our local economy, being so centered on high technology, medical devices, and prior to that, high-tech engineering, requires us to be able to have non-competes to protect those very, very scientifically advanced interests of the employers in preventing someone with very advanced knowledge from going into competition with them?
Well, it's important that manufacturers like that, especially the high-tech manufacturers, have the ability to protect their trade secrets. They invest many millions of dollars in developing and perfecting technology, and the law does allow them the ability to protect that through non-compete agreements.
Now, I know that you focus your practice heavily in this area. Are you seeing more and more non-compete litigation being brought and a need to get involved in the court system with those agreements?
It has increased over time, and as business turns down and the value of customers to a business becomes even more important, that is something that we see more and more of.
We're going to take a break. We are talking non-compete agreements on the program today. We are going to take a break, but before we do that, we should remind you, your phone calls are welcome. If you want to have a question, by all means, give us a call for Tom or Dave on the program this morning, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. Once again, the question today, are non-compete agreements legally enforceable? We'll continue coming up in a moment. It is Minnesota Law presented by Moss & Barnett, online at moss-barnett.com. It is Minnesota Law presented by Moss & Barnett. We're in studio each and every Saturday at noon. Tom Schroyer is our host. My name is Steve Thompson. And Tom, the topic today are non-compete agreements legally enforceable.
Yes, Steve, a very important question for many Minnesota employers and employees alike. And we have Dave Jendrzejek here in studio with us today to answer questions if we have callers who have non-competes or are thinking about them. And we'll be discussing how they work, how they are formed, what some of the technicalities are, and what kind of ramifications they can have for people who sign them.
And the phone number is 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. We have some phone lines open, but we have someone waiting right now, and that's Chip in Golden Valley. Chip, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. Say, I work for a large communications company here in the metro area, and we had to sign a non-compete clause at the time of employment. The question is, because Minnesota is considered a at-will state, if the employer terminates the employment, does that terminate the non-compete thing?
Well, Chip, the short answer to the question is no, and that's because the contract of a non-compete is an issue that's separate and distinct from the reasons why an employee separates from employment. So whether an employee resigns or may be involuntarily terminated, fired, that does not affect the enforceability of the contract.
Dave, I must say that that seems like a rather harsh result. If I'm working for an employer and I'm fired and I don't have to have a reason be given to me for that termination, maybe the business has even declined and it's a layoff situation, and yet for me to be precluded from working in my chosen field where I'm experienced and have lots of know-how, that seems to be harsh and unfair.
Well, and yet that was the deal that the employee struck with the employer when the employee decided to come on board to begin with. So it's fair in the sense that both parties are living up to their end of the bargain.
But do you think that a judge might take into account the those circumstances in deciding how much of a covenant to be enforced, how long to enforce it, or over what geographic territory?
Well, there is a concept, Tom, that applies to actions to enforce these covenants, and the concept is called unclean hands. That's a shorthand term referring to some sort of bad acts on the part of one party or the other, in this example, the employer, which would somehow suggest that the court should not fully enforce the contract. It's possible to have some type of misrepresentations, some other type of actions that might rise to that level, but in the main, the contract is generally enforced as written.
So let's talk about how one of these contracts is put together. What kind of terms are we talking about that tie the hands of the employee after they leave a given employment?
Well, such agreements take several different forms, Tom. One form would be an agreement that prohibits the solicitation of customers of the business. This is most common, and it may, for example, prohibit the employee from contacting or doing business with any customer that he or she has had contact with, say, in the past 12 months of employment. And the rationale for that is simply that it's that customer contact that has developed created a relationship between the parties that allows the employee to take advantage of that relationship.
We go to the phones again. We have Roseanne. You're on the air. Hello.
Hi. I'm involved in a non-compete contract with an employer I'm quite happy with at the moment. But what I've observed is that all the employees have been asked to sign the same contract, but several have left and gone to work locally in companies that are competitors, and no one's pursued the contract. I guess my question would be, if that's true, then should I be laid off and want to work again in the same field? Would that give me some advantage to fight that contract?
Well, we can't give advice over the phone, but in general, the circumstances under which an employee either an employer either enforces or does not enforce an agreement can have an effect on the court's view of the matter.
But, Dave, it's true that there is no bright line rule in the courts that says that just because the employer hasn't enforced the non-compete when one employee left the business previously is a defense to enforcing that agreement when a second or other employee leaves later after that.
It's not a bright line. You're absolutely correct, Tom. It may be a factor that the court takes into account. Courts that are asked to enforce contracts of this type are acting as courts in equity, as we talk about it in the law, meaning they essentially balance the rights and responsibilities of the parties in a way that treats the parties equitably. And sometimes issues like this are taken into account by the court in doing that.
And, Dave, I would assume that someone who's being asked to sign a non-compete should have someone review that document on their behalf.
Well, Steve, it's always a good idea.
Sure.
The fact is there are many ways in which a contract of this type will be deemed to be unenforceable if it's not written properly or if it's not put into effect properly.
But by the same token, I think it's important, Dave, isn't it? Is it not for people to know that if they're an employee and they're signing such an agreement, that the chances are it well might be enforceable against them, so they shouldn't enter into such an agreement without giving the matter a lot of thought and getting some counsel perhaps from a lawyer as to what they might be getting into.
Oh, absolutely. And let me emphasize that this issue of non-competes is one that the courts view very carefully. The general rule is that non-competes are disfavored in the law. That is very true in this state. At the same time, if they are properly drafted and they are reasonable in terms and scope, they will indeed be enforced by courts in appropriate circumstances.
It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. We have the news and weather coming up and then much more on the program. Our phone number is 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. Non-compete agreements in the spotlight today. And the question is, are non-compete agreements legally enforceable? Our host, Tom Shore, Dave Jendrzejek, is our guest in studio today. Much more coming up on Minnesota Law here on 830 WCCO. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. It comes your way each and every Saturday at noon here on 830 WCCO. Be sure to go online, moss-barnett.com. Tom Schroyer is our host, as always. I'm Steve Thompson. Dennis Matuszak is our studio coordinator. And our guest is Dave Jendrzejek, and we're talking about non-compete agreements today, and we want to go to the phones. Ken and Blaine, you're on the air. Hello, Ken.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I have a quick question that relates to the previous question. Can an employer, if the employee is already employed, then presents the employee with a non-compete, and the implication is that this must be signed to stay employed. Is that acceptable way to do it? Is there any legal issues that any recourse the employee has?
Well, Ken, there are some definite legal issues involved there potentially. Let me explain the issue of the topic of so-called consideration. The general rule, and this applies to any contract and covenants to compete as well, the employee has to get something in exchange for signing the contract. Otherwise, it's unenforceable. And generally speaking, what the employee gets is the job itself, the employment. The offer of employment includes a requirement that the employee would agree to a non-compete, probably includes a copy of the non-compete itself, so the employee can make an informed decision as to whether or not they want to take the job subject to the non-compete. If that occurs, then it's enforceable for that reason. At least there's consideration to enforce it. The employee received something of value. Now, the fact pattern you raised presents the situation where the employee already has the job, and the question is, has the employee at that point in time, being asked to sign it later, received something of value? If there's nothing else the employee receives, the agreement would not be enforceable because it would lack consideration. However, let me tell you that the rules on this are a little complicated in that even after beginning employment, an employee can be restrained and an agreement can be enforceable if the employee receives something else of value. It might be cash. It might be a promotion. It might be an increase in salary. It may even be an opportunity to expand the employee's career opportunities by having access to seminars, training. All sorts of things can form things of value sufficient to support a covenant. But there has to be something, and it has to be a real benefit to the employee, and it has to be negotiated.
Dave, would you say, though, that if that in that same fact pattern, if the employee works at the same job then for any number of years, that the court might look differently at enforcing it on the theory that what happened so many years ago in terms of starting work and then being asked to sign the agreement was somehow waived by the employee who continued to work for the in that position?
Well, there are cases, Tom, that hold that where the employee receives long-term employment after signing such a covenant, and I'm talking 9, 10, 11, 12 years, 18 years, that long-term employment can constitute the thing of value sufficient to support a covenant. But those are tough cases to prove very often. But it is possible to enforce a covenant with that in mind.
When someone is looking at a non-compete, we talked before the break about, say, for instance, a potential employee saying, well, I'd like to have someone review this. Is it something that can be negotiated in your experience, like salary and benefits? I mean, can you sit down and say, well, I don't like this about the non-compete. Is that reasonable? Is that possible?
It's possible. Generally, most employers have a standard non-compete that they would like to see all of their employees, at least the ones that they ask to sign. They like to have the employees sign it and maintain it as a set agreement. However, that doesn't mean that from case to case, situation to situation, the covenant may not be negotiable. Anything is potentially negotiable.
Dave, we were talking before the last break a little bit about what kinds of variables are taken into account in non-compete agreements, and you were talking about how some of them are focused on not soliciting the same customers that you've worked with maybe for the past year. Other agreements have time restrictions, geographic restrictions. Can you just briefly go through that list so we have an idea of what we're talking about here?
Sure. We were talking about what potentially these covenants can prohibit. And we talked about the non-solicitation of customers. They may also prohibit an employee from competing in any respect within a defined geographic area. For example, an insurance agent who's prohibited from soliciting insurance or competing with the agency within a 25-mile radius of the office. That's a typical geographic non-compete. Other provisions might include non-solicitation of employees provisions, meaning the employee cannot, after leaving one employer, go back and try and take other employees with him or her. Also, non-competes and these restrictive employment covenants can protect trade secrets, as we alluded to earlier, trade secrets and confidential information. All of these things may be appropriate subject matter for non-competes.
And in terms of the time limit, how long can the time run for restricting somebody from working in their field?
Well, that can vary from case to case, Tom. Generally, here in Minnesota, the courts approve a one-year time limit for most non-competes. However, it is a case-by-case basis. There are some cases that uphold a two-year covenant in the context of employment. And the courts, in making this decision about what sort of time is reasonable, they look at such issues as the length of time necessary to eliminate the identification between the employer and the employee in the minds of customers. Or they may look at the length of time necessary for the employee's replacement to obtain the licenses or learn the fundamentals of the business to be able to replace the employee. But it is a case-by-case analogy that's made. 1 year in this state is generally held to be reasonable.
But it could be a lot less than that, too, depending upon the job functions involved, the training, the experience, and the responsibility level.
Absolutely. And let me add, too, that in the context of a non-compete in the sale of a business, the time period can be much, much longer than 10 years, in fact.
We go to the phones again. By the way, those numbers, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. We are talking about non-compete agreements. Are non-compete agreements legally enforceable is the question of the day. And we go to Steve and Ramsey. Steve, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi. My question is, I've been employed for quite some time with my current employer. And they had, when I started, there was no non-compete clause. I'm in sales, and they came through not quite a year ago, about 6-8 months ago, with a non-compete clause and basically forced everybody to sign it. Nobody had a choice. If you didn't sign it, you were done. That was the threat, and they even followed through in many cases on it. The company is actually out of Indiana. How enforceable is something like that?
Steve, the general rule is that continued employment alone is not sufficient to support such a covenant. In other words, if the employee doesn't receive anything at all in exchange for signing it other than the right to continue employment, that's not enough. That's not anything of value because that's something the employee already has. So in that fact pattern, it would not be enforceable for lack of consideration.
And it is a global economy. He talked about the parent company being in Indiana. I would assume there are plenty of people that have non-competes where the parent company may be from Europe or Asia or another part of the world. How are non-competes viewed in other parts of the world? Is there such a thing?
Well, there are, Steve. As a matter of fact, some non-competes at least purport to be of worldwide applicability.
Wow.
In other words, the agreement would allegedly prohibit the employee from competing anywhere in the world, not just in Minnesota, not just in the United States, but worldwide. Now, I should tell you that's a very difficult standard to meet, very difficult for an employer to claim that its market area is the entire world and therefore it needs such kind of protection. But in an appropriate circumstance, maybe dealing with the IBMs of the world and such other multinational corporations, that may be deemed to be reasonable by a court.
Dave, going back to the caller's question, what kind of, what amount of consideration would it take in order to make that agreement that they were asked to sign here recently enforceable? Is there some dollar amount, some threshold there that would be adequate?
Well, there's been some litigation over that time, as you might expect, and at least one case held that a payment of $500 was sufficient to support a covenant in that context. But remember that the thing of value we're speaking of can take so many different forms, be it cash, a promotion, opportunities, a raise in pay. It's looked at an individual basis, but the court does not scrutinize very carefully the actual value of the thing so long as it's clear the employee got something in exchange for signing.
Are there specific employment classifications that are more susceptible, non-competes are more enforceable? I was thinking about a production worker, for instance, someone who works and produces a specific product versus someone who's out selling that product. Are those good examples of one may be more enforceable than another non-compete?
That's absolutely right, Steve. Remember that the two interests that an employer may legitimately protect are, number one, its goodwill and its customers, and number two, its trade secrets, its confidential information. And therefore, it's those employees who either have access to trade secrets or who have that personal one-on-one contact with customers that enables them to develop that rapport. Those are the employees that are most likely to be asked to sign non-competes. They're the ones who can, if they choose, go across the street and potentially harm the employer.
Now we go to the phones again, and joining us on the line now is Elise in Minnetonka. Hello.
Hi. I have a question. I work for a social service agency. I'm a psychotherapist, and I am leaving to start my private practice, and the agency has a policy of transferring clients to other therapists in the agency. I have several clients who would like to come to my private practice. Is there any legal problem with that? I mean, ethically, I feel like it's appropriate because of the service that I provide.
Well, do you have a non-compete, some agreement with the employer that would otherwise prohibit that?
I signed something about that, yes. What they have said to me is that I can refer them to another therapist or have them terminate with the agency if they don't want to be transferred.
It sounds to me like it's a complex situation potentially where you really would be well advised to have the matter reviewed by a lawyer. But Dave, as a general rule, the kind of professional relationship that our caller has with patients is one in which an employer could have a legitimate interest and have therefore protected by the courts.
Yes, absolutely. As a matter of fact, the doctor-patient relationship, psychotherapist-patient relationship, a chiropractor-patient relationship, those are key relationships that enable the employee to develop a real hold over the individual customer or patient, and does allow the court to protect those.
You know, I always get a kick out of the fact that lawyers have exempted themselves from non-competes, unlike those other professionals. Our Supreme Court has ruled that they are unethical for lawyers to enter into, which I think is a bit ironic under the circumstances, but now I understand that's the way life is.
That's right.
Well, we are a very popular topic on the program today. We have time for a few more phone calls. If you have a question about non-competes, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. It is Tom Schroyer, our host. Dave Jendrzejek is joining us in studio. It's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, here on A3O WCCO. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, each and every Saturday at noon here on A3O WCCO. We have had a lot of great calls on the program today, and we want to go right to those calls again. We go to Tom and Blaine. Tom, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm an engineer, and I work for a medical device company on pacemakers and defibrillators. And I was wondering about... it seems like it's more of a revolving door policy as far as around here at the moment, because companies, we're having people leaving, engineers leaving, and they're going to other medical device companies in town or in similar positions, and they all have non-compete clauses. But recently we had a layoff, and they pretty much came down on people and said in a layoff situation is they retain the right to go after you if you go to the competition and they're laying you off. I would think that, you know, it would be a different situation where somebody just willingly just leaves and goes to the competition versus getting laid off and going to competition. I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
Well, either way, the employer, of course, has its desire to want to retain the benefits of the agreement and protect its interests and trade secrets or its customer base. And in that sense, the reason for the separation or the reason why the employee went to another employer in competition is in that sense irrelevant. It's not irrelevant in the scheme of things in life, but as a practical matter, the contract, if it permits the employer to retain those interests and protect those interests, and the agreement is otherwise enforceable, then, of course, a court will nonetheless enforce it. Now, I should say that there's a lot of variance from employer to employer, case to case, whether or not they will decide to follow up on a non-compete and enforce it, even if they have the right to do so. Sometimes employers have a very determined pattern of enforcing every covenant. Others are very lax about it and may enforce it only in limited circumstances or perhaps very rarely or not at all.
And, of course, here in Minnesota, we haven't talked about this except indirectly. The courts have the power to what's called blue pencil or rewrite non-compete agreements to draw them in a way that the court believes is fair and appropriate for the circumstances. And in that regard, Dave, would you say that a court might take into account the caller's knowledge about a particular trade secret or high-tech area and whether or not that entails a longer or a shorter period of time to protect, and also perhaps take into account the fact that there was a layoff?
Oh, absolutely. The court does have the power to modify, as you pointed out, a non-compete. If it's unreasonable, the court has the power to cut it back to something that is reasonable. As you mentioned, something we call blue penciling, editing. And that right exists, and the court takes many things into account in deciding whether to enforce the agreement in terms of time, in terms of geographic area, if that's a term, or in terms of the scope of what's actually prohibited.
Now, very quickly, Dave, if there is a lawsuit brought, is either party entitled to recover their attorney's fees? Because I know that this kind of litigation can be very, very expensive.
Well, Tom, most often, these covenants not to compete are drafted in such a way as to entitle the employer to recover attorney's fees and, for that matter, other costs in prosecuting a violation. And that occurs very often. However, I should also point out that from the employee's standpoint, if the employer has inappropriately attempted to get the employee restrained, for example, through a temporary injunction, and it later turns out that the employee was wrong in that regard, Well, then it may well be that the employee can recover fees himself or herself.
Very quick show today. Thanks, Dave. Dave Dendrajek from Moss & Barnett. Tom Schroyer, our host. It is Minnesota Law presented by Moss & Barnett here on 830 WCCO.